Hello, everybody. We are beginning now with Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries, number 26A. And we are on page 99 of the Paths of Higher Evolution compilation. We have worked our way through what DK has said about the path to Sirius in Initiation Human and Solar, and also in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. And we were just noting the similarity between the symbol for the Venusian school and the symbol for the first solar system, previous solar system in which Sirius was even more involved, we are told, than it is today in this solar system, I suppose through its monastic power. And we were noting the symbol as well. For Sirius, or for this particular path, the duplex rotary motion, with the orange cross, even-armed, the central emerald fire at the crossing point of the cross, and the duplex rotary motion of the blue circles, of the blue interlocking circles around that cross. Now we are ready to move on to what is said in the rays and the initiations. I have frequently hinted in my various books that the sun, Sirius, is closely related to our planetary life. And in fact, much more closely related. Than one would think. Yes, than one would think. Much closer related than one would think. IFT. Yes, IFT. Okay. In fact. All right. Much is known in the hierarchy anent this connection, and the particular relationship of this fourth path to humanity by numerical resonance, and we are told that the bulk of humanity will tread this particular path. There are so many fours lining up. Okay. To the fourth path, the fourth kingdom of nature, but little can be communicated to the general public, and of course through books which can be read by the general public. Much has already been communicated in connection with Sirius. It does sponsor our entire initiatory program on this planet. I may, however, tell you certain things which may make your imaginative rangings, if I may use so strange a phrase, creatively profitable to you. And I'm beginning to think that that's what we're doing with these commentaries. They are filled with imaginative rangings, hopefully somewhat profitable. The great sun is to our solar logos what the monad is to the spiritual man. Has a particular part to play where our Earth is concerned. So the great sun, which is to our solar logos what the monad is to the spiritual man. Now, who is the spiritual man? Is the spiritual man? Is it the... is it the man who is affected by the soul? I don't think we can say, think we can say that the spiritual man is the spiritual triad, the personality of the monad. That is too high a connection, don't you think so? In any case, this shows the great position of Sirius relative to our sun, and actually to our Earth. Think of what it means for us to come in touch with our own monad. We have a certain life in the personality here. It's a personality life which may be infused somewhat by the soul energy, but the monad is still a far reach. So the solar logos is fulfilling the role of a personality in this particular analogy, I think. The other possibility, of course, is that the solar logos is close enough to Sirius to represent somehow the spiritual triad. Everything depends on what is meant here by the term spiritual man. Okay, so it has a peculiar part to play where our Earth is concerned, sponsoring our entire system of initiation. It might be considered by those with a sound sense of occult proportion that our tiny planet with its planetary logos, one of the imperfect gods of the secret doctrine, would be too small to enter in the slightest way into the consciousness of that supreme illumined entity who is greater even than our solar logos. Such, however, is the case. And this is also a quote often referred to, that somehow the planetary logos of the Earth does enter into the consciousness of the great Lord of Sirius, and I suppose that we human beings, we have our associates, we have our friends, we have those we help, and we have our pets. We have the members of the lower kingdoms which we help, and I think to the great Lord of Sirius, our planetary logos is very much like a member of the lower kingdoms. There is a relationship of very ancient date between our Lord of the World, Sanat Kumara, and the Lord of Sirius, and this exists in spite of the fact that our planet is not a sacred planet. Very ancient date, and, you know, I suppose this has to be Maha Manvantaras ago, I suppose. It might be added that our planet is, in the immediate cycle, owing to the factors I have lately considered with you, rapidly passing out of this category of non-sacredness, and on the inner planes and subjectively considered, is already a sacred planet. How much on the inner planes? I suppose above the above its personality level. The effects of this transition from non-sacred to sacred have not fully demonstrated themselves objectively. Well, we might say because our planetary logos is taking the fourth of a series of, let's call them minor, cosmic initiations. It is inwardly sacred when it has taken and completed the fifth initiation in this series. It will be outwardly and visibly sacred as well. The mystery of this relationship is partially revealed at one of the higher initiations, and it is then realized by the initiates that there is a good and adequate reason for the relation, and the following esoteric events, relations, and happenings are simply consequences. So what does he say? There is a good and adequate relation reason for the relation. And which initiation would that be? Would it be the possibly the fifth initiation, which has so much to do with Leo and with the fifth ray, even though it's ruled by the first ray, and which is a kind of glorification, we might say, as we have been told that a great opportunity for glory lies upon this fourth path. So anyway, there is good and adequate reason for this relation between Sirius and our planet. I think the Egyptian civilization, in their priestly understanding, emphasized this relation to a great extent. Of course, it is found in the deep esotericism of all the different cultures, if it can be recognized. So the following events, relations, and happenings are simply consequences of this definite relation. Excuse me. Okay. The majority of liberated humanity, and therefore a large number of the initiates who have to make decision, choose this way to the cosmic center. And this is telling us something about the present status of humanity and their rays. This is telling us something about the greater number of lords of compassion on our planet compared to the masters of the wisdom. Especially, I suppose, in this earth chain. The relationship as it expresses itself is between the hierarchy and Sirius, at least as it expresses itself. There may be deeper relations. After all, Sanat Kumara has an ancient relation, and he is the head of Shambhala. He has an ancient relation to Sirius, and not between Shambhala and that stupendous sun. Though, as I say, because of Sanat Kumara's early relation to the Lord of Sirius, and he being the head of Shambhala, there must be some connection. But basically, it's between the hierarchy and Sirius. And if we follow that sixfold progression in esoteric astrology, which led from Sirius to Pisces to Uranus to hierarchy, to the heart center, to the solar plexus center, we saw that the line is directly to the hierarchy via Sirius. Even though we've just been told that that Sirius is related to the head center of the initiate and Betelgeuse to the heart center, interestingly. The energy evoked in response to this relationship enters the hierarchy via the heart of the sun, creating as a consequence a triangle of spiritual energy of enormous potency. And in this case, you know, there are so many definitions of the heart of the sun, but in this case, we may be correct in assuming that it is the egoic lotus of the solar logos, his soul nature. Okay, so these are the consequences, these are the events. That there is a hierarchy, a serious hierarchy connection, not so much with Shambhala, and it comes in via the heart of the sun, and since Sirius is focused very much on the cosmic mental plane, even though the path to it leads to the cosmic astral plane, its connection to the heart of the sun, considered as the egoic nature of the sun, would make sense. But also, of course, anything that touches the egoic nature of the sun will be transmitted through the heart center of the sun, found on the cosmic astral plane, and the etheric heart center of the sun, found on the cosmic physical plane. So let's see what we have here. This is not a very good diagram. Let's see if I can make it a bit smaller and see if this will help us. Okay. And maybe the way to do it is this way. Okay. And I think the best thing to do really is to go to the page itself, which appears to be 413, because we don't have a very good representation of it here. And 413. And here is, there it is. Okay, it's a triangle. And it's what we might have expected. Sirius, the hierarchy, and the heart of the sun. Maybe there's a way to deal with this. Well, it's not a picture, so it's just going to be what it is. Yeah. Okay. I tend to want to make it a little more accurate, if possible. That's not too bad. That's not too bad. All right. So it goes. And there will be one immediately beneath it as well, which if we do this, we come closer, I suppose. Uh-huh, I see how this goes. All right, there it goes. We finally have it. So Sirius, the hierarchy, and the heart of the sun. As progress is made in the course of taking the higher initiations, it becomes apparent to the initiate that two major streams of energy enter our planetary life. So let's see how he describes this. One might think of Sirius and the Pleiades, of course, but maybe there's a different approach here. A stream of energy coming from the cosmic mental plane and to that focal point, which is to Sanat Kumara what the egoic lotus, the soul, is to the spiritual man. It carries the life principle to our planet and centers itself in Shambhala. So, yes, a stream coming from the cosmic mental plane, and this is coming to our particular planet. And from that focal point, which is to Sanat Kumara, what the egoic lotus, the soul, is to the spiritual man. Now, if we think about this, we have this focus in Sirius on the cosmic mental plane. So, where Sanat Kumara is a projection or an emanation of our solar logos, of our planetary logos, and he will have on the cosmic mental plane, the third level, an egoic lotus. So as this egoic lotus of the planetary logos is to Sanat Kumara, or rather to our planetary logos, so the egoic lotus of man is to the spiritual man. So Sanat Kumara here represents the spiritualizing man, and the egoic lotus is to him a great source of energy. Here it carries the life principle of our planet and centers itself in Shambhala. And from there, so this is coming from the cosmic mental plane. That's the point, I think. From there it is dispersed throughout all forms upon the planet. And we call it life. It must be remembered that this life principle embodies or is impregnated with the will and purpose of that which overshadows Sanat Kumara as the soul overshadows the personality. So what is it that overshadows? It has to be his soul nature. It has to be his soul nature, his his soul nature, or the nature coming through the egoic lotus, on the cosmic metal plane. So we, too, our personalities in the process of being spiritualized by the soul, and we are overshadowed by the egoic lotus, by our soul nature, and the monadic life through the jewel in the lotus comes through this egoic lotus, and life pours into us. So there are two, let's repeat this, two major streams of energy which enter our planetary life. A stream of energy coming from the cosmic mental plane, okay, where the egoic lotus of the planetary logos, and therefore of Sanatkumara, is found, and also the egoic lotus of the solar logos. From that point, which is to Sanatkumara what the egoic lotus, the soul, is to the spiritual man. So there is definitely interplay. You know, one must be a spiritual man for there to be interplay between this interplay between him and this point. For us, it's on the higher mental plane. It carries the principle of the life principle of our planet, so we live because of the planetary logoic soul, just as man lives because of his soul, because of the planetary logoic soul. And it centers itself in Shambhala, so it is a kind of a life stream coming through the egoic lotus. Maybe we do not yet receive a direct impact from our monad. I think this is what is being suggested, that we, or let's say our planetary logos, does not yet receive a direct impact from his monad, because the monad is esoterically non-effective, because our planetary logos is a non-sacred planet. From there, it disperses itself throughout the forms upon this planet. We call that life. It's as if it comes from the jewel in the lotus, as if this life energy comes from the jewel in the lotus of our planetary logos, just as for us, life energy is coming from the soul, but especially from that central point we call the jewel in the lotus. It must be remembered that this life principle embodies or is impregnated with the will and purpose of that which overshadows Sanatkumara, as the soul overshadows the personality. So that, let's say that, is on the cosmic mental plane. All right, and then there's another stream, a stream of energy coming from the sun Sirius, and this enters directly into the hierarchy and carries with it the principle of buddhi, or of cosmic love. And so Sirius does have this quality, but the Pleiades, so it seems, in even greater measure. This, in a mysterious way, is the principle found in the heart of every atom. Of course, he says it is mysterious. What is found in the heart of every atom? Is it, in a way, is it a form of electric fire? Or is this type of is our electric fire, a form of cosmic buddhi, which is found at the heart of every atom? It is the principle, the sustaining principle of our particular solar system, and apparently it has its origin in Sirius. Our solar logos provides this, but maybe Sirius provides it to our solar logos. So, two streams, the cosmic mental plane, and this first stream does not involve Sirius. If I said so earlier, it should not have been. This first stream does not, need not, or does not involve Sirius, but instead the egoic lotus, the monad, and the egoic lotus of the planetary logos. Yes. Okay. The life principle follows the line of 1357, while the Buddhic flow follows the line of 246. So we can say that the logoic plane is on the line of the life principle, and so is Atma and the Atmic plane. Thus, Atma Buddhi, which is the monad in expression, we could say, often said, this is the monad in expression, becomes the blended reality which is brought to full unfoldment as evolution proceeds, and we're told that Atma Buddhi is especially blended in those upon the path of the planetary logo. Remember that. Atma Buddhi is especially balanced and blended for those on the path of the planetary path of the planetary logoi. The energy of Sirius bypasses, to use a modern word, Shambhala, and is focused in the hierarchy. This is so interesting because remember how the Antikarana can be seen as bypassing the soul proper. It is built, as it were, directly to the monastic permanent atom outside the actual domain of the causal body. So this is the second type of bypassing that we are discussing, type of bypassing. The first type involves for the man the building of the Antikarana and its bypassing of the soul in the egoic lotus. Its effect is not felt until after the third initiation, though the masters use this energy while training disciples for the second, fourth, and sixth initiations, very much on the 2-4-6 line. So some touch of Sirian energy will be experienced by the disciple in training for the second initiation. This is interesting, is it not? Right. So, we're in that section that tracing certain events, relations, and happenings which are simply consequences of the relationship which our planetary logos has with the great logos of Sirius. The majority of human beings take the path. The relationship is with hierarchy specifically. The two major streams into our planetary life are along the 1357 line and the 246 line, and only one of them is from Sirius. And then number four, the entire work of the Great White Lodge is controlled from Sirius. Okay. Well, this we have been noting as we go. The whole science of initiation is, in a way, emanating from Sirius, at least as far as our solar system is concerned and our particular Great White Lodge. The ashrams are subjected to its cyclic flow. The higher initiations are taken under its stimulation. So one becomes, as it were, a kind of disciple of the Sirian Lodge at the time of the third initiation, the third human initiation. For the principle of Buddhi, of pure love, i.e. love wisdom, must be active in the heart of every initiate prior to the initiation of the great decision. So, in a way, the Syrian initiatory regime is deeply involved in the training of initiates for the second, well, for initiates up to the sixth initiation. Very interesting. It must be active in the heart of every initiate prior to the initiation of the great decision, because this must be made with, I think, a very, very full monadic understanding. This is required. Okay, so the entire work of the Great White Lodge, controlled from Sirius and higher initiations taken under its stimulation, prior to the Great Decision. It is therefore only initiates of the fifth, sixth, and higher initiations who can work with the potent Buddhic livingness which permeates all ashrams, though unrecognized by the average disciple. And, you know, perhaps it is this Buddhic livingness which is at the heart of every atom, because it combines, it seems, this is a combination of the second and first aspects of divinity. But we realize that this kind of livingness is provided by the logos of Sirius. This is a somehow very important idea here. This is so interesting that the masters are using this Sirian energy to train for the second, fourth, and sixth initiation, but probably in the training for the sixth initiation, it is not recognized. It is not recognized, at least by the trainee. Okay, more consequences, more events as the result of the definite relationship between our planetary logos and Sirius. This Sirian influence was not recognized, and little of it was definitely focused in the hierarchy until Christ came and revealed the love of God to humanity. He is the expression par excellence of a Sirian initiation, and it is to that high place he will eventually go, no matter what duties or hierarchical obligations may take him elsewhere between that time and now. The Buddha was originally to have chosen the fourth path, but other plans confront him now and will probably claim his choice. Does this mean that at no time he will change his choice and go to Sirius? It's kind of interesting because the Buddha has this third ray monad, and has the third ray monad, and this is a monastic monad. So and we learned this in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, that he and nine others who had reached a certain stage of evolution at the end of the previous solar system and who are on the third ray monadically are the only types who can put in three simultaneous appearances. So there's no question about the deep intelligence and the cosmic touch, I think, from the cosmic mental plane, which the Buddha received at his sixth initiation, or a kind of supreme enlightenment for him. So the Christ is a Sirian initiate of what type? A Sirian initiation, this is our seventh initiation. And he has taken the sixth, but has begun the seventh. And that would bring him to a state of transfiguration with respect to the system of Sirius. At least he's in process of doing that. It even appears that when St. Paul was taking our solar third initiation, it It took, it was not an immediate event, but a process, really, and we are told about different stages in the process of him taking that. I mean, his being blinded by the light on the road to Damascus was one aspect of that initiation, and reaching out towards Sanat Kumara when he was writing, was it the letters to the Hebrews? That was another part. There were probably various phases of him taking that initiation. So on a higher turn of the spiral, the seventh initiation of the seventh heaven, and those high initiations last a much longer time, would be characterized by episodes or events stretched out over a long period of time, and perhaps looks like for the Christ over 5,000 years as he began it 2,000 years ago. And his intention is to be the bodhisattva of the Aquarian Age, which will last another 2,000 years. And sometimes they say 2,500 years. Anyway, 5,000 years is the span that he has selected for his bodhisattvaship, and he began that already 2,500 years ago, around 500 BC, roughly. So the hierarchy was more than we could say the hierarchy of light, couldn't we? So the hierarchy of our planet was more in that time, in times previous to the Christ, the hierarchy of light, and less so the hierarchy of love. And now it is the hierarchy of love and light, and we owe very much of this to the Buddha, to the Christ particularly. Excuse me. All right. But I do find this quite thought-provoking, that the Buddha, who had such a great power of manas behind his entire presentation. Of course, we read so much of his power of love. He mastered so many of the monastic abilities early on and then dispensed with them in terms of teaching humanity. But I don't see any other way that, but that he can be a third-ray monad. This is quite clear in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. The implications are almost unavoidable, and we're told that he does represent in a very interesting way the third ray. We can even look at that if we wish at some point here and see there are several places, but they are kind of split. Okay, the creative order. Let's look here a little more. Third divine aspect. The Buddha embodied in himself the force and activity of the third ray, of the third aspect of divinity, the divine cosmic principle of intelligence. By its fusion with the ray of our solar system, he expressed perfectly the significance of light in matter, of the intelligence principle as found in form, and was the avatar who carried in himself the fully ripened seeds of the past solar system. Yes, this is amazing. And here found in esoteric psychology, the fully ripened seeds of the previous solar system. There's no question. This particular reference about the divine cosmic principle of intelligence and the other reference from A Treatise on Cosmic Fire are confirmations here. Okay, in a curious and esoteric manner, whenever DK mentions that word esoteric, watch out for the monad, because sometimes it really is the hint that the monad is indicated. In a curious and esoteric manner, therefore, the Buddha, he had a cosmic touch. This is the place. The Buddha from the mental plane and also upon it embodied himself the blazing enlightenment, which is the result of a rare occurrence, a cosmic touch from the cosmic mental plane, almost certainly. So let's, I just feel this has to be copied and used, if you don't mind. 277 and 278 of Esoteric Psychology 2. Okay, here we go. Esoteric Psychology 2, 277 and 278. The Buddha, Cosmic Touch, Blazing Enlightenment. And what else did it say here of importance? Divine Cosmic Principle of Principle of Intelligence. N-L-I-G-H-T. All right, so this is so important somehow, and I would like to be able to reference that, and I know you would too, one day to make all of these available to those who would like to have them. Okay. So, as a matter of fact, I think I'll include this here, right in our references that we are using right now. So that the hierarchy was something else when the Buddha was the head of it for 2,500 years before the Christ becoming the head of the hierarchy. So EP 2 and 277 and 278. And we will make of this a smaller excerpt so that it's easier to handle. There we go. All right. Sanat Kumara is not on the Syrian line, at least not at this point. But to speak in symbols, not too deeply veiled, Lucifer, son of the morning, is closely related. And, you know, then who is Lucifer? Well, from one perspective, it is humanity. Hence a large number of human beings who will become the disciples in the Syrian Lodge, beginning from the time on kind of a probationary Syrian path at the third degree. If we look up Lucifer, we may find, and humanity as well, we may... Lucifer, son of the morning, important to humanity. Maybe we can find just Lucifer in general. There are five references. Here it is. Son of the morning, the prodigal son, humanity. There it is. Lucifer as humanity. And in a way, we are the fallen angels. We are the ones who are in danger of prideful demonstration. But Lucifer is also the light in humanity that comes from the creative hierarchy of the solar angels. Lucifer is the ruler of humanity, and it is mahatic, and it has to do with intelligence and the growth of intelligence in man. There is a deeply interconnected relationship here between Venus and the Earth and between the solar angels and man in the whole Lucifer story, as I'm sure we do realize. Okay, moving on just a little bit further. Right. So he's not on the Syrian line, though he does have a, we have to remember ourselves at this point, though he has that relationship of ancient date. But Lucifer, who rules humanity, and is not the devil, we must say, you know, it is the monastic principle. As bestowed by the hierarchy of Lucifer, which is the hierarchy of solar angels. And let's see here again. There it is. You see? We see here the New Jerusalem, the hierarchy, the ruler is the Christ, and here humanity, the ruler is Lucifer. Now, if we succeed in bringing the love of the heart into our expression under the influence of the solar angels, who are luciferic in a very high sense and loving also in a very high sense, then we will fulfill the fuller meaning and better meaning of Lucifer here. We are the rising intelligence. Humanity is the rising intelligence that is meant to be united with love. And our second-ray soul, the second-ray soul of humanity, what it will eventually be, will indicate that we have succeeded in doing this when it comes into expression. So, hence the large number of human beings who will become disciples in the Syrian Lodge. This is the true Blue Lodge, and also called the Great Great White Lodge on Sirius. And to become a candidate in that lodge, the initiate of the third degree has to become a lowly aspirant with all the true and full initiations awaiting him within the sunshine of the major sun. And of course, Sirius is that major sun. For us, the major sun. And, you know, just what it's like, you know, if we turn to this particular chart, we will see that below, okay, still larger. No, there we go. That's somewhat larger. But I'm going to have to blow this up just a little bit. Here's average humanity, and here are people on the probationary path. They are included within the circle of hierarchy Shambhala. And this is before the first initiation. Well, so it is. So it is for those human beings who take the third degree. They are the correspondents to those who await the first initiation on Sirius. And we know this. The first initiation in relation to Sirius is the fifth initiation, our mastership. Mastership from a planetary perspective, transfiguration from a solar perspective, and simply an entered apprentice initiation from the Syrian perspective. So all is relative here, and we have to learn that we are preparing for entry into very great spheres where our greatest accomplishments seem small indeed compared to what will be reached initiatorily within those spheres. And number seven, none of the above facts indicates divergence of view between Shambhala and hierarchy. He does have to protect us from such separative thinking, because some very strong first-rate types will say, oh, well, look, I'm a disciple of Shambhala, so I don't have to express love. Well, this, of course, would be foolish, but you know how human beings are when their integrated personality seizes upon certain spiritual facts and appropriates them at the personality level. So none of the above facts indicates divergence of view between Shambhala and the hierarchy, nor do they signify cleavage of differing aims and goals. Maybe there are some different methods involved. The whole subject is reflected in such minor relations on Earth as between the spiritual triad and the personality. These are two triangles which are correspondential and superimposed. Correspondential, I like that word. The mental unit and the monastic permanent atom, Atma and Buddhi, the Christ and the Buddha. Well, the whole subject, maybe it's the subject of non-divergence. And we cannot say that there is such a distant relationship between the Christ and the Buddha as there is between the spiritual triad and the personality, nor between Shambhala and hierarchy. But we do see the source of inspiration and that which is inspired. With the monastic permanent atom, the source of inspiration, and the mental unit, that which is inspired. With Atma Buddhi, they are closer. Although we could say that in a way Buddhi is inspired by Atma, and with the Christ and Buddha they are closer, though at some of the hierarchical ceremonies we can say that the Christ is inspired by the Buddha, for instance at the Waisak festival, and even in a sense the Christ and Buddha are involved in the working out of the Christ festival in Gemini. But no differing aims and goals, simply the union of two different aspects. And here the spiritual hierarchy, the spiritual triad, represents the union of the first and second ray, personality of the third ray. The monastic permanent atom, representing the triad, that union of the second and first ray, in connection with the mental unit, which represents the third ray. With Atma and Buddha, Buddhi, it's a first and second ray relationship with the Christ and the Buddha. It is basically a second ray relationship, but also a third ray, second ray relationship, with the Buddha representing both the first and the third ray, and Christ representing the second ray. But these are different aspects, let's call them aspects of energy in cooperation. The above somewhat uncorrelated items of information, yes, will give you a general idea of the significant connection between our unimportant little planet and the vast expression of divinity, that vast expression of divinity, the life which is manifesting through Sirius. He's calling these four points somewhat uncorrelated, but maybe we can, well, we tried to find the correlations. They are rather, in some senses, hardline, softline correlations, and they also represent a superior and an inferior receptor. Well, our Earth is a very inferior receptor compared to the great life of Sirius. Our Earth, a very inferior receptor compared with the great life on Sirius, or the great life of Sirius. So, this vast expression of divinity in our unimportant little planet, the vast expression of divinity, the life which is manifesting through Sirius, it is an expression which is organized, notice that seventh ray indication, and vital beyond anything man can vision, and we would say living and livingness, and we have with it what's called that Buddhic livingness, vital beyond anything, because remember the Buddhi represents cosmic ethers, doesn't it? So but of course the question is there cosmic Buddhic livingness in Sirius? There certainly is cosmic Buddhic livingness in the Pleiades. There is cosmic monastic livingness, we might say, in Sirius for sure. But it does have its own Buddhic approach. I think it has less of Buddhi than the Pleiades do, but just like Venus, it has a very, very powerful Manas, and it's developing Buddhi. And Sirius has a very, very powerful cosmic Manas, and it's developing cosmic Buddhi. I think this is the analogy here. It is vital beyond anything man can vision, and which is free to a completely unlimited extent, again, beyond the power of man to comprehend. Well, what do we learn in about Sirius? In Sirius, there is a demonstration of the law of freedom. And the law of karma, and the sensitivity, These are the three aspects: freedom, first aspect; sensitivity, second aspect; and karma, third aspect. So he's been trying to tell us that about the cosmic path, which extends like an antikarana to Sirius. And it is an unobstructed path, and it's because there exists a relationship of ancient date between our planetary logos, between Sanat Kumara and Sirius, and what this relationship is based upon. I wonder if we could... Well, you know, if the relationship to the solar logos is one of monad to the personality, isn't that what he... or to the spiritual man, then the relationship of Sirius to our Earth is like the relationship of the monad simply to the unaware man, not even to the spiritual man. See, the solar logos is like a spiritual, no, okay. Let's see here. Right, the spiritual man. The solar logos is like a spiritual man to the monad when compared to Sirius. And Sirius to the Earth is like the relationship between the monad and an ordinary, non-sacred man. So, because there's the difference between the grand heavenly man and the heavenly man. The grand heavenly man, of course, is of a higher order altogether than the heavenly man, just as the spiritual man is of a higher order than the average non-aspiring man. But we can say, of course, that our planetary logos is now aspiring and is moving toward that second initiation, cosmically considered. Let me put that down. Our planetary logos is moving towards the second initiation, cosmically considered, in which the energies of Sirius, cosmically again, can be used to train him. Just as the hierarchy uses the energies of Sirius to train initiates even of the second degree, but of the fourth and sixth, so our planetary logos moving towards his second cosmic initiation, whenever that may be, can be trained by cosmic energies which are emanating from Sirius. Even as Sirius is the initiator of our solar logos, so it seems to be involved in the initiatory process not only of the human beings on our planet, but of the planet itself. So there is a great deal of freedom found here, and we're trying to get some kind of sense of the comparison between this great life of Sirius, which is organized and vital. We're thinking of the etheric connection now, beyond anything man can vision, and which is free to a completely unlimited extent, at least unlimited in terms of our local cosmic logos, I suppose, again beyond anything the power of man can comprehend. The principle of freedom is a leavening energy, where we think of leavened bread, you know. It rises. So let's see, leavened. Ah, there it is, leavened, spelled that way. And it's a leavening energy which can permeate a substance in a unique manner. So elevating substance. And the law of freedom is elevating humanity right now, even with apparently a disastrous results, disastrous to the old forms. This divine principle represents an aspect of the influence which Sirius exerts upon our solar system, and particularly on our planet, and I would say through Uranus, which through the first ray is directly related to our planet. They both share the same monadic ray and other rays as well, I think, the third ray. This principle of freedom is one of the attributes of deity, like will, love, and mind, of which humanity knows as yet little. We are told there are other attributes of deity. Now notice the word attribute, because DK is talking about the rays of attribute compared to the rays of aspect. So we know something of the aspects of deity, but there are attributes of deity which have to emerge and of which we know little. But anyway, the law of freedom and the principle of freedom, working through that particular source or entity in our solar system which represents freedom, that is Uranus, has an effect upon our little planet, which has the, interestingly enough, the psychology, we are told, of the divine rebel, probably tracing back to its first ray monad, I suppose, and within our solar system. The freedom for which men fight is one of the lowest aspects of this cosmic freedom. So interesting then, interesting that because of Sirius and its law of freedom, law of freedom, the spiritual hierarchy cannot violate the free will of its students. The members of the Black Lodge are always violating the free will. They are working through compulsion, and the hierarchy of our planet, so attuned to the hierarchy on Sirius, cannot do so. The freedom for which men fight is one of the lowest aspects of this cosmic freedom, which is related to certain great evolutionary developments that enable the life or spirit aspect to free itself from the impact, the contact, and the influence of substance. So we can ask, you know, would the French Revolution, how about spelling it, revolution, be an example? The Magna Carta, or is it spelled this way? Maybe it's spelled that way, but pronounced otherly. And other great events in the fight for liberation in the Second World War, the resistance against those forces who would impose the power of substance. So in the Second World War, the resistance against the imposition of materialism and the domination by substance. Yes, and I'm sure, you know, if we think about it, there are great evolutionary moments where this, the law of freedom asserts itself. And the uprising now of the masses, we are told, also an aspect of the law of freedom. All right, so this will be right now the end of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries number 26A. That won't work. End of. And this is the Path of Higher Evolution compilation, page 105. And beginning of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries 26B, Path of Higher Evolution compilation. Compilation, page 105. And we will go on.